My guest today is Katie Asher. Katie is a devoted mother of five, widely recognized for her unwavering commitment to her son, Houston, who has severe autism, and her faith in God. She founded Asher House to support families affected by autism, drawing from her own experiences navigating trauma, loss, and abuse. Her faith-driven journey led to a breakthrough when Houston, after years of nonverbal communication, found his voice through letterboards, using spelling to communicate. Katie also explores telepathy, a discovery she credits with transforming her worldview and deepening her connection with Houston, and with herself, and with God. Their story inspired their co-authored book, The Book of Heaven. Katie's resilience and advocacy make her a beacon of hope, empowering parents to presume competency in their non-speaking children and fostering a community of connection and hope. And now, my conversation with Katie Asher. Can we just start with you telling us a little bit of your backstory and what autism means to you?
Okay, so I am, the first time I ever heard of autism was I watched Rain Man. That was the first time I'd ever heard of it. I was 16 years old and I went to the theater with my boyfriend, and it was just such an incredibly frustrating but extraordinary human experience. And I had no idea. I never even imagined in a million years that that would be my life. My son Houston is my second of five kids, and I'm now a single mother, and it was a very abusive relationship, my marriage. So I had to get out, and that terrified me because I had all five kids and Houston's severe autism, and I didn't know how we were going to make it. My background is I grew up just with a really strong and deep abiding faith in Jesus Christ as my Savior. And that sustained me throughout a very painful childhood. And as I got older and was in this very difficult relationship, and then with my son regressing into severe autism after his vaccines, my faith was radically and utterly crushed. And I kept trying to cling to all the promises of God. In particular, all things work together for the good of those who love God, who are called according to his purpose. Now imagine trying to cling to that verse while you're scrubbing feces 5 to 8 times a day out of the carpet or the walls or the bed or the books or whatever it's been smeared on. And it's not nice feces. It's like bloody, diuretic, acidic, foul-smelling stuff that I don't even know that a human body could produce. Clearly something was wrong with him. And the doctors didn't care. It was like, oh, you have this diagnosis, so now we don't have to treat you for anything, no matter how medically obvious this is a medical issue. We don't have to take care of you because you have a disability. And that is how the medical community treats people with profound disabilities. And it's completely unethical and has to stop. It has to be addressed. There's so many wrongs that these families have to deal with by society, by the institutions. And I'm over trying to pretend like they're experts or they're good people. They're not. They're not either. When you refuse to heal and refuse to care and you continue to tell a lie, you've lost all status of any expertise or stature in society or any right to speak on any authority. You've lost it. It's gone. You do not have my respect. So that's how I feel about that.
Yeah.
we lived in, I'm trying to kind of sum this up so I don't take too, but it was severe, you know, regression into this, you know, hellish world of symptoms with no sleep, you know, smearing feces, screaming, crying, always hands over his ears, naked all the time, couldn't stop eating and drinking, running and throwing himself in a body of water, constant near-death experiences, eloping constantly, almost drowning, being hit by a truck at age 3, you know, sores all over his body that, again, no one would treat, no one would take care of him. And I'm just sitting there trying to figure this out on my own, just trying to do all the work, just like read medical. Here I am. I'm like 5 kids, severe autism, abusive ex-husband, reading medical journals. Like, this is my life. Like, this is how I learned about autism. You want to know how I learned about autism? I read. I lived. I couldn't care less what those people say. I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so that was my life. And we were told every year, once you get to, it sounds all great, right? It starts with the Babies Can't Wait program. So, your kid's struggling to speak. Let's get them in the Babies Can't Wait program. What you don't know is that you've now entered in, without really realizing it, you've now entered into a totally separate educational track. Without really, it comes under the term of help, but it's not. It's a totally separate track. They give you minimal resources, but they basically put you in very quickly into a special ed preschool to help, and then they start doing ABA. ABA is the absolute worst possible thing you could possibly do to someone with a motor impairment. And that's what people don't understand, is that these children with profound vaccine injuries, their motor is impaired. Every single function of their motor is impaired. They can't motor plan. They can't feel their body. That's the vestibular system. The proprioceptive system doesn't work. The sensory motor don't integrate. That's because the encephalopathy interferes with sensory motor integration. The sensory synapses don't prune. The sensory motor don't integrate. They're taking in everything, and they don't have the ability to motor plan. So this is a motor impairment, and then they use motor-based tests to test their intelligence. Or they call them assessments, but they're IQ tests. And they basically say, look at all the things he can't do. Oh, so we've got to reteach them all these different things. And we've got to drill them over and over and over on the same thing. What you're doing is you're actually myelinating motor pathways, not for what the individual wants to say, but what for the tester wants them to do. So you've just now, and then they say that's all their real communication. That's all their real voice is essentially what you've myelinated. It's absolutely nothing to do with intentional motor. It's only what they've myelinated. So now that you're in this track of you're not smart, you get put in an isolated, self-contained classroom and taught the exact same colors, calendar, coins for 18 years. You're isolated from everyone. You never get a voice. You never get to participate in society. You never get to make friends. Then you graduate. You have no skills, no education, no friends, no education, musical enrichment, art, sports. You've never been taught anything. You're released with nothing. They won't even give you a diploma. You get a certificate of completion. It's not a real diploma. And now you're prepared to do nothing. And because you've done this, you've been in this track, now you can't speak, we're going to tell your children or your parents to take guardianship, and we're going to encourage them to put you in a home or a day program. So now you're jailed. You spent your whole life in jail and then your whole future in jail. And this isn't figurative. This is literally what's happening to 2 million children and young adults in this country, not to mention the other countries. So I feel extremely strongly. And then we have these ABA communities come in. By the way, the ABA industry is worth $7.62 billion, and they work directly with ASHA. ASHA is the speech licensing organization who is worth $174 million in assets. They have absolutely no authority whatsoever. All they do is approve licenses for speech pathologists. And this organization has basically come in and said, we don't believe in spelling. We don't believe in this. We're going to say it's not a valid form of communication. And the schools, because they don't want to pay for retraining and basically admitting that they've denied all these children education for, can you imagine that civil rights violation? So they come in and they're like, it's not a valid form of communication. ASHA said so. ASHA has no authority whatsoever. The schools are supposed to be following the ADA. They're supposed to be following the law, which says that an institution, a public institution, has to follow the communication choice of the person with the disability. There are multiple statutes within the law that designate that the person with the disability gets to choose their communication and the institution has to follow their choice. They completely disregard the law and they take in this non-government agency and say, well, they said it, so that's what it is. Not recognizing that this agency has got a lucrative reason to not acknowledge the competence of these individuals.
Profits. It's profits over humanity.
It's always profit. And ABA, by the way, gets paid. They get to charge 40 hours a week, billable hours, to insurance companies. Why are your insurance company or policies so high? The ABA is one of the reasons. And they do not want spelling acknowledged or admitted because it would prove their entire concept of behavior wrong. So this is important to understand. If you have a motor impairment, like we look and we observe people behaving a certain way, right? And we put meaning on it. Mm-hmm. We all do this. This is kind of just like we observe, we put meaning on it. Okay. But if you have a motor impairment and essentially it's like your body's turned on, but there's no one piloting it, how can you be held responsible? And how can that be a legitimate test of your intelligence, which, by the way, we should never be testing anyway. That's completely unethical. The idea that your rights are somehow linked to your intelligence, where's that?
That's powerful.
Yeah. But that's what they've done. They've taken these tests and they've said, you get rights equal to what we say your intelligence is, and we're going to use your disability to measure your intelligence. I don't even believe in intelligence anymore. I think we all have aptitudes. I think every human being is brilliant and beautiful and wonderful. And we all have different ways of maneuvering our body and different things that we're passionate about and giftings. But that doesn't make one person smart and another person not smart. I mean, I always go back to Forrest Gump, stupid is as stupid does. I see a whole lot of stupid out there with people who say they're smart.
I rarely do this, but you posted it on X from the 15th day of Autism Awareness Month on intelligence. And I'm going to just read it. Okay. You said, intelligence is the ability to understand and process information, not the ability to demonstrate it to other people for them to put a score on your mind and worth.
Yeah.
That is so powerful.
Yeah.
And accurate.
And they gave my son with a severe motor and sensory impairment. Well, I wouldn't say his sensory is impaired. His sensory is over. His sensory is extra sensory. And his motor is impaired, which is a bad disconnect. Right? But basically, they gave him an IQ score of 45 at 18, age 18. He sat there like within 2 years later when he was spelling and he was doing integrals and calculus. I'm sorry, but your tests are broken. They're a horrific way to measure what is going on in the mind of another human being. And these all go back, all these IQ tests go back to the progressive era when social science came into being. And this was a result of Darwinism. And they thought, wow, okay, natural selection. Well, we'll select. We don't need to naturally select. We're going to do it ourselves. We're going to decide. These social scientists created who they felt was, they saw who they thought would be good for society, and they wanted this pure society without problems. And so they began this process of identifying, testing, isolating and then sterilizing, in some cases euthanizing. And this, of course, reached a heightened test, or, you know, case where, not test, I mean, they were actually doing it, but in, you know, in the Nazi regime. That started in the United States and in the Scandinavian countries. That's where that started.
Not surprised. How old was Houston? You mentioned that, was there a certain vaccination schedule that happened?
So the very first one that caused it was the DTP Hib shot. By the way, this is the live DTP Hib. Now it's called DTaP, which is a less dangerous form of the very dangerous DTP shot. So this was the actual shot that Congress, or well, these law, these, you know, big pharma basically went to, they went to Congress and said, we can't make vaccines safe. There's no way to make them safe. So the idea that they say vaccines are safe is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That's literally why they were given immunity. Yeah. Is because they couldn't make them safe.
They brainwashed people to think
that. It was just a big lie.
Yeah, yeah.
And but the reason why they were was because they were having all these lawsuits, and they were losing because people were getting, children were getting horrifically injured by the DTP shot, the very same one that injured my son. This is when it started. Now, what people don't realize is that, so we, what, like, this wasn't even, so when people are like, no, it wasn't, I'm like, well, first of all, I was there. So I get to say what happened and what didn't happen. And secondly, he started breaking out in petechia everywhere. I was like, what's this? I thought it was like a rash. I take him there. I call the doctor thinking it's nothing. And they're like, rush him to the doctor's office. They immediately admit him into the hospital. And they said he has immune thrip. I want you to listen to the words in here. Immune thrombocytopenic purpura. Okay. That's really important in there is the cytopenic purpura. Okay. The cyto in particular. Okay. So you've got this immune thrombocytopenic purpura, which is an autoimmune disease where he started killing off his, all his blood platelets. She says, this is a vaccine injury. It was, they were not sure if it was leukemia or this ITP. It was the ITP. She said, this is a vaccine injury. What you have to understand is this is before the big pharma push against pediatricians and doctors acknowledging that. So that had not happened yet. This was 1997. So that happens. We don't know the effect of it. He continued to get, you know, the petechia. We were giving him gamma globulin. We were doing all these things, but we didn't realize what had actually started. And when we came to the next vaccine, and he did start, I will say he did start at that time to start to regress. But he was also, it was like weird because he's like regressing and progressing at the same time. So it was like he's losing some skills, but he's still developing others. So it was kind of hard to figure out like what's going on. And plus he's still really little because that was 8 months old. And the very first thing I ever noticed was he suddenly lost the ability to clap.
Motor movement.
Midline. Something had happened. He literally was like, and he lost that ability. And then I was trying to play, like roll a ball back and forth with him, and I'd roll the ball to him. And it was like, he couldn't push it back to me. Now I know I didn't at the time, because I was just a young mom. I didn't know that what I was witnessing was a motor dysfunction, was something was wrong in the motor.
Yeah.
Well, when we go to the next shot, I told the doctor, I really am scared of this, considering what just happened. I don't think this is a good idea. And he goes, this is my big safety net right here. That was a fluke. He'll be fine. That's what I got. And so I stupidly didn't listen to myself. And I listened to this doctor who does not know what he's talking about. And got an MMR, and that's where people start seeing these massive regressions. And that's where, that was when all the rashes, the horrific rashes, and the diarrhea and all the gut issues started was there. It was bad. But I know it had already started with the first one. And I think the MMR just basically like, and what you have to realize what happens is the most dangerous thing. And we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to. I can move on to something else.
This is great.
So the aluminum in the vaccine, okay, has an atomic number of 13. So with it, the way electrons work, right? I actually know what I'm talking about. Like, I actually went and had to study chemistry because the people who are supposed to be the experts won't actually teach us what the information is. Mm. Aluminum is the adjuvant that they put in these vaccines. And they do this. If you go and look on Wikipedia, you can actually see aluminum is used to essentially stimulate the immune system. How does it do that? The atomic number is 13. In any electron, any element, the first shell can have 2 electrons. Every shell after that can have up to 4 pairs, so 8. So 13 is the number. You've got 2 in the first one, 8 in the second one, and then you've got 3 in the valence shell. The valence shell is the outer shell, and that's what determines how electronegative something is. 3 is very electronegative because it's got 1 stable and then it's got 1. So it's trying to fill that whole shell. So it starts stealing electrons. Now you've got cells that are unstable. So they steal electrons. Then they steal electrons. This is how it stimulates the immune system, because it basically, it triggers all of this cellular oxidation and activity, which of course makes the immune system go, uh-oh, something's going on. Unfortunately, because they can't control, and this is where they said they can't make it safe, this is where it is, they can't control what electrons are stolen, how many it takes to reach homeostasis. They can't control that. There's no way to control it. And in some people, they can reach homeostasis quickly. And in other people, it just goes on like fusion, like this massive cellular oxidation. So when that happens, something in the immune system starts, it's called, remember I told you immune cytopenic purpura? A cytokine storm is released, particularly of interleukin 6. Now, this is what they would call, a cytokine storm is what they would call hypercytokinemia, I think is how you pronounce it. I could be wrong about the pronunciation, but that's the word. And basically, at its worst cases, it can cause massive organ failure, but it absolutely does cause massive organ dysfunction and damage, which is why you see these kids with all these medical comorbidities all over their entire body. The next thing it does is it triggers encephalopathy. Interleukin 6 causes encephalopathy, chronic encephalopathy. This isn't like, oh, my ankle swelled and now it's okay. This is long-term, the rest of your life, your brain is on fire. What does that do to development? Well, when we're all first born, we have all these sensory synapses and we're taking everything in, right? This is how we learn at such a fast rate. When your brain's inflamed, guess what it doesn't do? It doesn't prune sensory synapses, because that would be dangerous to prune the brain when it's inflamed. The next thing that doesn't happen is it doesn't develop the motor, because the sensory synapses aren't pruned, so it can't develop the motor pathways. And then the next part of development is the integration of sensory and motor. That does not happen. Mm-hmm. Those primal reflexes that begin whenever kids are like learning these basic motor movements, that's when sensory and motor are integrating. So when you interfere with that process, what you're doing is you're creating a disconnect between the brain and the body. The mind is still brilliant. It's still incredibly absorbing everything, but now it just can't demonstrate. It can't control the body, so it can't demonstrate to us what it knows, what it's absorbed. So the reality is they're way smarter than us, way, way smarter, because they're taking in everything. And so the whole thing about telepathy, thought is energy. They're absorbing it. Emotion is energy. They're absorbing it. All these, like this whole metaphysical world that we're in, they're absorbing it. And so spelling as a way for them to use gross motor, the thing they have the closest connection to, but even that's severely impaired. And when people look at all their impulsive movements and everything, what that is those are the myelinated or impulsive motor pathways. Intentional motor is something totally different. And so what happens is these myelinated and impulsive pathways, they've been done so much, they get, so they're heavily, they're strong, fast, wide pathways. Yeah. So it's intentional motor is like trudging through the forest, whereas an impulsive or a myelinated motor pathway is like a super speedway. So that's the one that overrides the intentional motor, because the intentional motor just takes too long. And so what do we see? We see the one that fired first, not the one they want to fire, not the motor pathway they're trying to get to connect, but the one that had enough time to execute. And so spelling is just a way for them to try to develop motor pathways and get a little bit more myelination on those motor pathways, so that with 26 letters, they have access to the whole English language and or other languages, but because they're brilliant. And the whole thing about language, even like we kind of think it's like, oh, you can't know that because you, well, when you understand thought, you understand the actual intent behind the words. Like one word in one language is this, it's a one set of sounds, and the same like boat, right? Boat in English is the sound bo and o and t, right? It's those sounds together. When another language, it's a different set of sounds. But whenever you're able to hear thoughts, you're past the sounds. Mm. You're at the intent. And that's what these guys are. They're way past our like menial, you know, utterances. They are getting to the root, to the meaning of everything.
Goodness. I want to talk a little bit about telepathy now, mm-hmm. because of what you just described. But I also wanted to talk about spelling. But
okay.
Which yes. one would you want to talk about first?
Oh, let's talk about spelling first.
Okay. So can you just let me know, because I know nothing about spelling to communicate. Can you just take me through this process?
Yeah,
like
sure
the, thing. The intensity, the learning about it and things? Just
yeah. Okay. So what you do is you start off with, we started off with three boards, right? And they've got about 8 to 9 letters on each board. And you ask them a question that they already, like you teach them something, you presume competence, and then you ask them a question about what you just taught them. So you know that they've got the material. Like it's not like we just talked about it. I know I'm going to believe you're smart, and I'm going to believe the only thing that's impairing you from communicating is your motor.
Okay.
So I'm going to coach your motor. So let me explain that in a real quick. So is let's say someone, you know, had never seen a basketball before or heard of the, or, you know, ever played or anything. And they handed you a ball and they said, put that ball in that hoop. And you're looking at it and you're like, how am I supposed to do that? Mm. Right. But then what if somebody said, okay, I want you to hold the ball like this, go underneath, and I want you to bend your knees, and I want you to look up, and I want you to push from the bottom, and I want you to kind of arc it like this. Right. Mm-hmm. And somebody starts coaching you through all those minute movements.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be right away, but over time you might be able to get that ball to go in that hoop. Now that's someone presuming competence. They presume that you understand how that they said, put the ball in that hoop, and they understand that you know what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what presuming competence is. So when I say to someone, spell this word that we just talked about, spell photosynthesis, I assume that they know what I want them to do. And the only thing that they're needing coaching on is how to move their arm to do that. That's spelling to communicate. That's motor coaching. That's letterboarding. That's all these different words. What you're doing is you're prompting their motor, just like you would for a T-ball, catching a ball, throwing a ball, hitting a bat, any of these motor skills, we would take the time. Swimming, incredibly complex. Mm. What do people do? Oh, you're not smart. You can't swim. You don't know what swimming means. Or maybe they don't know how to move their body that way. Mm. And that's this idea that because these kids can't speak, that somehow they don't comprehend. And presuming competence is critical to the whole process.
Yeah.
So you start with coaching their motor just to spell words, because you want to always, like, until you build up their motor, you don't make it difficult. Like, you don't make someone do a difficult motor skill or a difficult complex. Mm-hmm. You don't make it more complex when they still are struggling with the most basic stuff, mm-hmm. right? Because
yeah, yeah.
it's like learning the piano. You have to learn the scales first, right? Mm. You do that, and then you can start working on the progression. So you start with the three boards. And I mean, when Houston first started, he had a pencil, and it's got a stencil, right? So the letters are poked out. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is I didn't know this right away. Houston sees triple, and everything moves, and he goes blind from one eye to the other, sometimes both eyes. Did the doctors ever bother to figure that one out? No, they didn't. How would vision impact motor? Well, what we found out is that actually it's huge. It's not just where things are, but vision. Mm. Houston's going to say hi. Say hi.
Hey. Hey, Houston.
So it's something called your vestibular system. So what your vestibular system does is it takes in what you see and what you hear, and it's your body GPS. It tells you where you are in space.
Yeah.
And then there's something called saccades and pursuits. And these actually, so saccades, they're basically moving your eyes right to left. If you even try and like stop your eyes and like look, lift your eyes up, lift your eyes down, go to the right, left, you can see how like difficult and how like fine motor that is. Well, if you're seeing like triple of everything and it moves, right? Then people go, oh, they don't like, for example, they don't look in, they don't make eye contact. They don't like people. Or they're seeing six eyeballs and they can't focus on which ones.
Yeah.
So you see, it's the arrogance of the observer, right? The eye as an observer can determine the true meaning and intent by what I'm observing. Or no, you can't, because none of us have that ability to go into someone else's body and to experience what they're experiencing.
Wow.
So as Houston began, like we had the stencil, right? And some guys can't do the stencil because they have depth perception issues.
Mm.
And so they actually need the letters raised up. But again, unless you have a vision expert that can see what's going on with their eyes, you're again making assumptions based on what you're observing without knowing what's really going on. So Houston, we'd give him a pencil and he would sit there and he would be like this. To get to one letter.
Oh.
That's how exhausting it was to point to one letter. But the more I coached his motor, the more accurate he got. So then we reduced the visual field and we put all 26 letters on one board. Well, this is a lot harder visually and it's a lot easier to make a mistake. So your motor has to be more accurate. So we had to work on that. Once he's on the 26 letters, we can start to increase the intellectual load. So that's when we start asking more complex questions. So the way to get to independent open is you start with known questions, right? Like I told you about photosynthesis. I asked you a question about photosynthesis. You answered it, right? That's a known question. A semi-open question was where I taught you about chlorophyll, and I taught you about the different types of chlorophyll and what different chlorophylls, you know, the different wavelengths that they would reflect, right? And you know, absorb the whole, it's really incredible when you actually look at plants and what they do.
I agree with you.
But that would be like, so now there are several options. They're all right answers, but I don't know which one he's going to share. If I say name one of the colors that this particular, you know, type reflects, then you would, he has a couple of options. And so once he goes to that first letter, let's say he does, you know, red. And if he goes to the letter R, I know that the options are like, you know, I've got three different options. I know he's going to spell the letter red, right? So I can help him to coach him through the rest of that letter or the rest of that word. Yeah. Then we go to, and that's what they call a semi-open question. And then the next stage is what they would call open. And that's where I say, you know, I wear something I don't know the answer to, like, what is your favorite tree in the fall? Like based on like the different colors and the variations of like, you know, essentially once there's less sunlight and, you know, the other colors are able to emerge because if there's less sunlight, which one is your favorite and, you know, what color does it produce? You know, I could say something like that where I don't know what tree he's going to tell me is his favorite in the fall. I have no idea. I don't know what the answer is to that. Mm-hmm. So he has to be really good by that point mm-hmm. with his motor. He's got to be super accurate because I don't have any idea to help him get to that first, you know, letter. He's got to pick it and he's got to pick correctly. So, because that, you know, and so this is where, you know, and they can be like, for example, if he was trying to get to, if he pushed X for the first letter for a tree, I might go, was that a mispoke? Because maybe you're right beside, you know, the right underneath the R or something. You know what I mean? Like you're right beside her diagonal or something like that. Yeah. And so like as a coach, you're watching their motor and you can make some presumptions about what you know they meant to hit, but maybe missed. And you can help them correct that motor. Oh, you were right here. You needed to get right here. And you see this, what happens is this trust between the coach and the speller begins. And they're like, oh my gosh, because what they've lived through is ABA where, oh, you got it wrong. You don't know your letters. Oh, you got it wrong, right? That's what they've lived with.
Punishment.
Yeah. And so now someone's like, oh, you realized I missed it. You realized I just couldn't get there. And then what happens is this trust builds. And that's when communication opens up so beautifully, is because they're finally with somebody who presumes competence, who's coaching their motor, who trusts them, who they trust.
It's really no different than like if two people could verbally communicate, we have to be able to be on that same page. And then we build the trust. Yeah. That's like the gateway to trust.
Yeah.
So I follow that.
Yeah.
How long does it take to get to that open question?
It's different for everyone. And because again, their motor is all different. How many times are you practicing? What is their age? How regulated are they? There's so many other factors. We come from this mindset, and it's a false mindset, by the way. That there's one cause. If we're observing this one thing, then there's one cause. If there's this one problem, then this needs this one answer because there's only one factor. And that's just not the case with anything. We're all affected by so many countless factors. But I'll tell you the factors and I'll give you a rough estimate. If somebody practices every single day and that coach is believing in them and they are practicing really good regulation as far as getting their bodies regulated, they can, and I'm saying when I say practice every day, I mean like truly investing, and it can be broken up. If they can only handle like 10 minutes at a time, fine, break it up. But I try to get people to do in like 30 minutes or an hour a day, like at least. And I know in the beginning that can seem daunting, and that's why you just have to break it up.
Yeah.
Just little bits by little bits, you know.
No different than anything else. Like you were talking about the motor skills.
Yeah.
Like learning basketball or piano. You just can't get all the way into it.
You just break it up into how much they can handle at once. Yeah. But it's the belief in them that is the driving force.
Yeah.
So if you've got a coach that or a parent is going to believe in you, it's like a freight train. It's like their motor progresses so quickly because they've got that belief in them, just like any of us who has a coach that believes in us. Suddenly we can do things that we never thought we could do.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, I didn't even know I could do this. So, but if they have that, if they practice every single day and they have got the regulation and they've got the coach that's believing or the parent, and it's even better if it's a parent, I just got to say, sometimes this is really difficult for parents, and I don't want any family depending on the spelling coach to be the primary communication partner. The parent, one of the parents has got to step up into that role. They just have to.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be able to communicate with your family. That's where it needs to be. And that is harder because there's a lot of emotional, baggage that we all carry, especially if you haven't believed in your child and they could hear all your thoughts, that's affecting them.
Yeah.
And so you've got to confess. You've got to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
I want to fix this.
Yeah.
And that's where the healing begins. But let's say you do all those things. It is very, very reasonable to expect open communication in a year. It is actually reasonable to expect it in much less time than that. But I say a year because I feel safe saying a year. We just had someone, I had a friend and I've been trying to get her on the boards, with her son, and there were just so many obstacles. And we finally, got her on the boards with her son. And she's got a coach with her coming like constantly. And I think it was the 42nd session that he spelled his first open sentence. So that gives you an idea.
Yeah, okay.
And that's someone who has severe eye issues, struggles with regulation, non-speaker. I will say it's more difficult for the little ones because their bodies they can't even hardly sit. And I've seen it with that, and don't feel bad about doing this, is totally fine. If they can't sit, fine. Follow them around the room or have one parent hold them and the other parent holding the board. Like, do what you have to do. But you have to know that they want to communicate, and what you are witnessing is a body that they're not connected to that's struggling, and it's not them, it's their body.
Yeah. The language is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it easy to get started on spelling to communicate, or is that something it's more like depending on the area you live?
It's not widely available like it needs to be. Frankly, I have people contacting me. I'm in Pennsylvania. Can you help me find someone in Pennsylvania? I'm in, Nebraska. There's no one here. Where do I go? People are really struggling to find, coaches. There is Communication for All with the number 4. That's free and online. It's got all the succession videos, all the training videos, lessons. It's got everything there. And they do have people you can contact and for support. But I just will say it really does help to have somebody with you. It's kind of like learning any motor skill online. You can do it, but you have to be really, really well motivated to. Whereas if you have somebody in person, it's just another level. You can feel their energy. You can feel their support. You don't feel alone in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not have to cost a lot of money. I'm going to say this because I want people to hear it, that it's possible. I got one coaching lesson. I paid attention. And then I went and I did it myself.
Yeah.
Now, once I got Houston open, then I wanted him to spell with other people. I didn't want to be the only person he could communicate with me, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's, I mean, he'd already been trapped in his body his whole life. Like, I didn't want to limit his voice to just his mom. Like, that's horrible. Yeah. He's a young man. And so then it was, then we had this amazing coach that he worked with. And it was a man. And he got to talk about things that I'm not interested in, you know. And then we got another coach who was just this beautiful, life-giving source. And he got to be like this incredibly deep, encouraging, like really friend to her. And I got to see, like, through these relationships that he was having with all these other spelling coaches, I got to see the depth of my son's soul, because they brought out things of him that I didn't.
Yeah.
And that's why you want it to be a community. You want it to be, you know, with all these people, that you want it to be as close to what we all experience, you know, with unimpaired motor that you can. Like, we want them to have all those experiences, especially the social ones, because they've been deprived for so long. I mean, can you imagine, for two decades, Houston was 21. Almost about to age out of public school when we finally found the letter boards, when we started. I found out 6 months before his aging out, and we started the next month. And so his spelling, his very first, independent words were, "I'm in here." Can you imagine? And that was in July, and he aged out in October. I mean, 2 decades of fearing that you're never going to be known. And that's what we all, this idea these behaviors have, like, is essentially trying to deny the right for other people to be known, when that is the most instinctual desire every single one of us have, is to be known.
Yeah, yeah.
And loved. Just, and the idea that these experts supposedly can come in and deny, like, blanketly deny the rights of all these students is maddening. And the schools do it. Oh, also need to talk about schools. Not only are they awful, but they also, and they deny all the rights, but they get more money per kid with disabilities, but the money doesn't go to them. It goes into the general fund. They're happy to have a self-contained classroom that they can barely fund and let these kids just rot away, forgotten, while they take the money that's appropriated for them and they use it on their neurotypical students. And I have 4 other neurotypical students. And this is how I feel. If there's extra resources, it's going to go to the one who has the greatest need, not the one who has the least.
Yeah. Okay. How was it for you whenever you saw "I'm in here"?
I explain it like it was like I got hit with a gale wind, but it was my son's soul.
Oh, yeah. I sometimes I just imagine how the nonverbal autistics must feel not being able to share. It's very concerning to me.
It's, they feel despair.
Yeah. Hopeless too.
Yes.
And it's hard to trust people, like you were mentioning, which is important. So hopeless, it must feel.
And you know what? One of the things that we want so desperately is to change how people treat each other.
Mm.
You know, this, and I'm sorry, the lighting is so bad. It keeps going back and down, but these individuals, like, they understand how critical love is, but we also need to understand that, in kindness, like, it has to be kindness. This idea of, like, trying to, okay, I should go back. There is no lack. This is important. There is no lack. We have an abundance of everything we could possibly need.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lack of distribution, but there is no lack.
Yeah.
And And I mean that in every sense of what we all want in life. There is no lack of love. There is no lack of, you know, of any of the things that we need to be a human being. But the way it's distributed, the way it's confined, the way that we think that we have to compete for resources, like these are the fundamental things that create fear. And when we realize that there's no lack, that we all have within us this the abundance of the Lord God within us to distribute freely, to give freely, we don't have to like hold up for ourselves. Like we have an abundance coming through us and we need to pour it out of us. And so I think that's fundamental to understand how they can say with such certainty, we just need love. We just need you to see each other and us and everyone as a human being worthy of with intrinsic value, eternal, infinite value. Mm. And we need to treat other human beings with that same thought every single second of every single day.
Yeah. I like Matthew 7. Matthew 7 is pretty good on that. Mm-hmm.
Houston says that one soul is worth more than all the money in the entire world.
Oh, yeah.
One soul.
That's accurate.
Yeah. And so that's how we, like, that's the shift that has to happen, right?
Yeah.
And they are here to make that shift happen. That's the fundamental shift that they want to see. Now, I've had people go, oh, like, and I, this is important to me because it's important to understand this, like, oh, it's just, we should all just be unified. That sounds great, right? Now, this is tricky. Unity doesn't happen on its own. You can't try to force unity. Mm-hmm. It requires truth and justice. And that those create within us this recognition that we may have, you know, we may have been wrong about something. And we need to right it. And mm-hmm. we need to humble ourselves. We need to repent. We need to say we're sorry. We need to fix things. And that is what creates within us the ability to unify. But this idea that you can force unity without like acknowledging, you know, some people are still saying they're more important than other people, but let's unify. Like, well, the people are getting stomped on aren't okay with that. They don't really feel unified with you. And they don't think that you have their best interest at heart. So it feels disingenuous to them. And so.
The moms of autistics. They're being stomped on.
They are. And it's frustrating for people who do not live with this unreal challenge that these parents and these non-speakers have lived with being dismissed by people who have none of those issues. And that's been so hurtful. And, you know, a lot of these people are just, they're continuing to be hurtful. They're not taking a pause to go, maybe I was wrong and I shouldn't have said that. And this wasn't about me. And I shouldn't have made it about me when it wasn't about me.
Humans have a hard time with that.
Yeah, they do. And you know, the thing is like, it's okay to be wrong.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like you can go, you know what? I don't like the way I handled that. I wish I had thought about someone else instead of myself in that moment.
Yeah. Making it right will be a better outcome.
Yeah.
Afterward. You'll be a stronger person. There'll be that unity.
Yeah.
That's how we sustain our species and so forth.
And it's how you create trust. If someone never apologizes and they keep trying to assert the same opinion and they like, then there's no trust and there can't be unity when there's no trust.
Yeah. Are the letter boards something that like Houston or others that use this, they can just take with them like in public? And
yeah, I have like this little laminate one that I use, it's my little travel one, and I carry it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I didn't finish the progression because yeah, after you do the stencil, then you progress to a laminate. And ideally then you progress to like I shouldn't say ideally, because I don't, here's my other thing is like, for example, let me show you. Like, this is something we work on, right? So this is a little portable keyboard that we can take with us everywhere. This, I never plug this in. I do not connect this to Wi-Fi because Houston can hear the Wi-Fi. He is completely distracted by electromagnetic energy, the EMF. And so people think, oh, technology is better. And I'm like, actually, technology is worse. Technology is a whole nother distraction.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
And so people think, like, technology is better. And I'm like, it's not. It's worse. But I understand people somehow think, I want to ask you a question, though. Which is real? This? Or, actually, I don't have his regular letterboard with me. Do I have one? Oh, here we go. Here it is. Which is real? Like, which is real letters? This one? Or this one?
I would say that
is
one.
Is an A here real? Or an A here real? Which one's real? It's the same.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, that's my point, is that they think that somehow if you do it on this, that's real communication. But if you do it on this, it's not.
So who, I'm like, who says that?
Oh, of course, all the people that are trying to attack spelling.
Okay.
But even people like, I have like I've gone into schools, right? And I'm trying to, you know, advocate for letterboards and spelling and coaching and all that. And this is what they'll say. Well, we have alpha boards. Why can't they just use those? It's a fair question. Why can't you just hold up a letterboard and hold up the keyboard? Why can't they just use it? It's because they can't control their motor. Their motor has never been coached.
So they just think they're just going to get right into it?
Right. They think they can just hold it up and they should just be able to do it when no one coaches their motor. Now, let me offer a comparison. Now, they also think if somebody, like, for example, Houston could spell with me, right? But then somebody new sits down and tries to spell with him and he can't do it with them. And people are like, well, why? He can't do it because I just tried and he couldn't do it. And I get really frustrated when people take the board from me and they're like, oh, I'll try it. I'm like, I'm sorry, are you trained?
Yeah.
This the equivalent of someone who's never danced trying to just step in and do a complicated dance that the two of them have been working on for years. It's not going to translate because there's not that connection.
Mm-hmm.
There is an energetic connection when two people, because they're depending on your emotional belief in them. Whereas that person that just holds up the board is like, prove it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that literally, I can tell you what actually happens in the body. What actually happens in the body is what any of us would experience, anxiety, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's anxiety. What I was getting at. It's like, yeah. I don't go communicating with everybody that I see.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't translate.
Well, and the thing about anxiety is, what does anxiety do in the brain? What does it do in the body? Well, what it actually does is it triggers the amygdala and the limbic system. And what does that do? Well, that triggers essentially a shutdown from the frontal lobe. It cuts off access to the frontal lobe. Where is intentional motor processed? In the frontal lobe.
Yeah.
So they've literally just done the one thing that they can do to cut off access.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
They're going to limit it to all those lower subcortical reflexive systems.
Yeah. So those are the, you know, those are the questions. Those are the attacks. Those are the, you know, the common questions. And they're, I don't fault anyone for having those questions. Because they're legitimate questions. What it shows is that they don't understand the physiology or the disability.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to explain that. But when I explain it, honor what I've just shared with you, because it would be the equivalent of someone explaining what it's like to be blind what it's like to not hear, and trying, and that person trying to tell you what they need. And then if you disregard it, you're that is such an insult to that person.
We don't like whenever our ability to think and expand our thought and our beliefs are offended. We want everything to make sense of everything that we can fit into a box.
Well, we want it to match with our experience. And we have a really hard time understanding someone else's experience.
Yeah, it's a big problem. Earlier you mentioned eloping. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if when people can learn to spell, if I just envision that this would help that. Because I think maybe a big source of eloping and self-injurious behavior too is not being able to convey their feelings.
So those are great questions. Definitely reduced for sure, but not eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of goes back to a couple of different things. One is that we don't recognize what they're experiencing all the time, right? Yeah. Because they're just taking in so much more. So what happens is Houston explained, he goes, sometimes my senses become illuminated and it's so painful. Well, so here I am, he can spell now, but that still wasn't able to help whenever his senses became more than he could handle. And in those moments, they get very dysregulated and they feel so disconnected from their body. And Houston experienced it. It's like my spirit is trying to catch my body. It's like my body has run off, but my spirit can't catch it. And that's part of the eloping, is this brain-body disconnect. They are developed fully into their etheric body, their spiritual body, and their physical body is operating. It's like somebody turned it on and let it loose. And so there's this wild disconnect between the two. And that's why as a regulation partner, I have to understand that and do everything I can to create the environment where he doesn't lose that connection.
Back to that trust thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a big problem with autistic children eloping and being drawn to water that you mentioned and drowning.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It is. It's horrific. Now, in the water in Houston, I thought did a beautiful job of explaining what they feel, but they're drawn to the water because they can feel their bodies. It helps them to connect back to their body because they can feel their whole body at once. The problem is the very thing that gives them that peace, and they can feel this metaphysical energy that's all around us. They can actually feel it in the water. Like, it's greater than we have the ability to experience, but they can experience. And so they're desperately drawn to the water. But of course, many times they can't swim.
Yeah, they can't swim.
Because that's a highly, highly complicated motor skill, and they are motor impaired.
Wow. I can't help but think of water is also, especially natural water, there's so many bioelectric signals being from the earth.
The water's living. The water has memory. Yeah. Like, the water's incredible.
Yeah.
We don't even understand how, like, everything is energy. And that's what people kind of miss. Like, they think we're machines, and we're not. Everything's energy. Thought is energy. Emotion is energy. Matter is energy. That's what E equals MC squared means, is that energy and matter are the same thing measured in different ways.
Mm. Electrons and protons. You mentioned electrons earlier. That's what we are.
Yep.
At the mitochondrial level.
But that's the whole thing, is that we're spirit too.
Mm.
And all matter comes from spirit. Matter is just the slowest, most densest form of energy. And, have you ever like lie down on a beautiful blue sky day and you can look and you can actually see all the like little molecules and everything moving and everything. And Houston said, you have no idea how much energy is in each one, and they're all transferring information constantly. And that's still somewhat physical, because we can actually somewhat barely visualize that. What we don't recognize is that we as human beings only process 4% of the actual energy. Four. So the idea that we could observe with our physical senses with only 4% of the information, that we could discern what is, the full vast accuracy of truth, is really arrogant.
Well, humans are arrogant though.
Yeah. And we can even look at animals and see that they sense more than we do. They are way more connected to nature than us, and we're part of nature.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big problem. We've removed ourselves from nature. Humans are the only people or species that say that we're the most dominant species. And I don't think
we're even close. We were supposed to be, like, the way God made us was to care for, not to dominate. That we were supposed to be the caretakers of Earth. Houston talks about the lost love, that that we were supposed to love nature, love creation, love the Earth, and it's this lost love. And it's like all creation is like crying out for us to love nature, to love creation, to love God. To like, we're all it. So here's the disconnect, right? Have you ever read C.S. Lewis, The Abolition of Man?
No.
Okay. It's a good book. But basically he talks about how basically man, like there's this, like these primal forces at work, right? And essentially that man in his search for progress is actually going to destroy itself. Mm. And that's kind of like the point that he's making, is all these things that we think are our progress are actually the elimination of us. And he makes some fantastic points. And he's trying to get us to get back to, what is intrinsic about being a human being. And that is in our, it's our spiritual nature. And it's our, and the thing about our spiritual nature is we should be valuing what is good and not valuing what is destructive. We should be able to recognize those and stop one and seek the other. And that's, we're doing the opposite. We're stopping what is spiritual and good, and we're seeking what is destructive.
Thank you.
And so there's this, basically this war between essentially the machine, everything that's artificial, or everything that's living, everything that's from God. Mm. And that is the war that is going on. And, this whole artificial movement is this, essentially this move to replace us, to essentially eliminate us. And so what is the answer to the machine? And of course, absolutely rage against the machine on all levels, but the answer to the machine is life. Everything living, everything that is true, everything that is good, everything that comes from God, everything that is that is biological, that is from the earth, that is from humans, that is from, God, that he created, more and more and more and more of that. Instead, we, bulldoze forest and put up concrete.
Yeah.
And we put all this EMF energy out into, not recognizing, not even caring that it has horrific impact on ecosystems and on human beings.
Yeah. Including us. Yeah.
It's like we're creating our own destruction.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very accurate. It's exactly what we're doing. Mm-hmm. How old was Houston whenever you first realized about the telepathy?
He was 21. It was not that long after he had started communicating. It was just like probably the next week, actually, maybe 2 weeks. And I couldn't figure out how he knew so much. And I was like, do you just have like really good hearing? He goes, I can hear thoughts. And I was like, I didn't believe him. Mm-hmm. I mean, who would believe that, right? And so I started testing him, and he was 100%. And then I started testing him without speaking, and he was answering my questions without me speaking.
How was that? I mean, how did you,
what I immediately realized, thought is a thing.
Yeah.
It's energy. And so people don't the thing about if it's energy, it has to abide by the laws of energy. The very first law of energy is that the law of conservation, that nothing is created or destroyed. It is only transferred.
Mm.
So we need to be taking everything and transferring it to what's good. That's the shift that has to happen. And when Houston talks about like world change is possible, like this is why they are here. They are here for this extraordinary purpose, to not just get us to like look good on the outside and still be rotten on the inside. They're trying to show us that the idea of privacy is an illusion, that all our thoughts are already known. They are real. They are working. They are doing what we're thinking. And we need to change our thoughts and take every thought captive and make it obedient to the love and the word of God. And then we can actually start to see the profound change.
Mood follows action. How we're acting will determine our thoughts. Huh.
Well, actually, our thoughts can determine our actions.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But
we tend to be reactive and let our situations influence our thoughts.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I see this really bad situation. What promise of God can I take and apply to this situation? I'm going to disregard the situation and I'm going to instead apply the truth of God to this situation.
Keeps us on track.
Yeah.
Temptation.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Doubt is the greatest temptation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matthew 4.
Yeah.
Matthew 4. Huh. So since you learned about the telepathy, has that helped? Can you just explain to me about what that's like now and how it's changed your guys' life?
Well, there's no privacy.
Yeah.
It has made me utterly and completely take ownership of my thoughts. So that has had a profound impact on my life.
It's almost like in 100% positive way.
Yes. Yes.
It has to be, right? Yeah.
I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's the best thing that could possibly have happened to me.
Wow.
I think all of us are okay with God knowing that we have really rotten thoughts when we shouldn't be. We should be going, God, that dishonors you. I don't want that thought in your world. I don't want that thought in me. I want everything I do to honor you. And I fail. I mean, please don't think that I've got this under, I fail at it every single day.
Oh, we all do.
Right. But I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's big. Your desire and intent.
Mm-hmm. So now when I fail, I'm like, okay, wait, what was the lie I just believed? What lie did I just believe?
Mm-hmm.
Identify the lie, cast it out, get rid of it, and go, what's the truth? What truth do I need to apply instead? And then do that. And I'm doing that all day long.
And
there's some things that I struggle with more, like loneliness is really hard, right? And autism is incredibly isolating. And, we have to be, we don't get to do a lot. And of course, because I have to care for him full time and, work full time, there's not a lot of resources, right? That's a lie. That is a lie. It's an accurate representation of the current framework, but it is not a belief that I should ever hold on to. The reality is he's Jehovah Jireh. The Lord supplies all my needs. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. So what am I to do in this situation? I am to believe. I am to go, Lord, you know I need this. I know you supply all my needs. I know this is a need that's in your will. Of course you want me to have what I need. Of course you do. You love me. You're my father. And so I have to, instead of looking at, the angst, replace it with, yes, the angst is here. And I don't let that tell me what to think. I let your word tell me what to think.
It has to be the ultimate accountability. You can shorten that lag time of, like, you recognize a problem, and instead of just letting it go unresolved and closing that loop, not fixing it, you get it right there.
Yeah, I do. And I will say that has a powerful impact on, like, I talk to other people who haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. And I can see it's almost like they're like mired down, like in this like mud pit, like where they can't get out, like molasses, right? Like molasses swamp, yeah. Right? You know, kind of like Candyland. Whereas that's what's so incredibly powerful about, you know, taking ownership of your thoughts. You're like, nope, I'm out. I'm not staying in this. No, you don't have me. You don't own me. I'm my father's child. You know, and we're constantly being attacked because, you know, the enemy does not want us to believe God. That is the original sin. The original sin was doubting God.
Mm-hmm.
And why do people are like, why is faith so important? I'm like, well, look at the original sin. Like, it was doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, faith is trusting that God has every single thing that you need, that no matter, even though it might take a very long time, you know, and that gets scary and you get lonely and you get worried,
mm-hmm.
that worry and that fear is not the answer. The answer in that waiting is to keep at it, keep believing, keep knocking at the door, keep persisting, keep saying no, no to the enemy, no.
Yeah.
My God says this, I will not listen to you. I will listen to my Father.
Yeah. And that builds a habit too. So you become more of that. Mm-hmm. Just like if you wouldn't resolve it, you would just let it go.
Yeah.
You become more of that.
Yeah. Which is why I, you know, went into that pit of despair for so long, because I did let those thoughts take over.
Mm-hmm.
And once I let doubt in, because the first, you know, the prayer that I was believing so strongly was, you know, all things work together for good of those who love God, who are called according to his purpose. And then when I believed that, I doubted that there was any way God could keep that promise. And my specific thought was about the feces. Here I'm cleaning up all these feces. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe, because there was too much of it. I'm like, I could believe that you could make one or two or three or four, but I'm like, this is 5 to 8 times a day for years. There's no way that you could bring all this feces for good. You can't do it. It's not possible. And so I started doubting God, and that's when the fear came in. It was like, once that fear came in, it was like I couldn't get out from under it. And when Houston first started, you know, communicating, one of the very first things he said to me, and mind you, I'm a sweet, loving person. I really am. And one of the first things he said to me was, all your thoughts are rotten. That killed me, because I was such a, like, I thought if I'm sweet and nice and kind and good, like, but it wasn't, because my thoughts were all fear, all doubt, all despair. And he said, and it was my doubt. And he said, you are literally destroying the very things you're praying for with your doubt. So we think that, like, we don't think, like, we don't realize that, like, just like faith works, so does doubt.
Yeah. It's like the antidote.
And so, I mean, that's why we have to completely and utterly and totally reject it. And, you know, you look at the word of God and it's like, do not fear, do not doubt, do not fear, do not doubt. It's like every single, there's 365 times, I think it says, where it says, do not fear, like one for every day of the year, right? Do not fear, do not fear. The answer to every single thing is trust God. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your paths. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. And our understanding is what we see. And here I am, 25 years later, and I'm telling you that I thought there was no way that God could bring good from all of that feces. And I am telling you that I was wrong. And God has brought more good than I could possibly ever have even imagined from all of that feces. So someone wrote, did a review, and they said, if these people, with after what they have experienced, can have an undeniable trust in the goodness of God, who am I to doubt it? And I stand by that.
Yeah.
God is good.
Yeah.
No matter how bad it is, God is good.
Yeah. Well said, Katie.
I actually have to get going now because I got to get Houston to his next therapy.
Okay. I'm glad he popped in.
I know, I am too. He also popped open several Cokes. I heard him. He snuck into the garage and got him. His brother's stash.
I'm forever grateful for our conversation.
Oh, thank you. I thank you for having me.
Can you let us know how to contact you?
Yeah, let me show everybody. So this is the Book of Heaven. If my daughter is, I know everybody asks this question, she is making an audiobook. It is close to being done. I don't have a date. She asked me to stop asking her for a date. I am on X, K, capital K, capital T, capital A, it's Asher 5. I have Asher House Hope on Instagram and TikTok, and I'm on Facebook, and I have an email address in the book. It's asher.house.hope@gmail.com. I obviously I work full time and take care of Houston full time. I do my best to reply to people. If I don't, it's not because I am not trying. It's just because I've got a lot on me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. It's really nice to be here.
Yeah.
I need to stay on longer for it to like update or anything?
No. Once you stop, it should be fine.
All right. You have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.